Mediocrity Podcast. Talk about that nerdy stuff. Movies, comics, and video games. It's all good and there ain't no fluff. Brian Kluger is hosting the show. Jeremy Miggert's got jokes. Jonathan Atterbury sounds really handsome, and we all sure love you folks.
Hello, and welcome to an exciting edition of Mediocrity Podcast, straight from iTunes and Stitcher Radio. We love you. We're glad to be back. It's a wonderful day in the neighborhood, as Mr. Rogers would say. I'm Brian Kluger, and I'm joined by the fantastic, amazing, awesome, effervescent? And luminous.
Effervescent.
Jeremy Maggart and Jonathan Atterbury, how are you guys doing?
We're great, man. How are you?
I'm doing well. Jeremy, what's up?
Oh, not much. So we're bubbly. Is that what you're saying?
We're so bubbly. I'm so excited. No, it's just a good day. We've got movie releases in the Marvel Universe coming out today and tons of cool news, and we've got two very cool topics we're going to do later on where we talk about the best moments in Marvel movies so far, as well as picking current TV shows that should be adapted into video games that haven't been yet. I can't wait to see what you guys picked. I actually picked several, just in case we all picked the same one. So I'm curious if that happened. But first, let's dive into, since we haven't really talked Oscars on the show, the upcoming Academy Awards are coming up very soon, and a movie that got nominated for one category, which I think should have been nominated for like multiple categories, but this one got best screenplay nomination, is Logan, the Wolverine movie. I'm very happy about this. I think Sir Patrick Stewart and Hugh Jackman should have been nominated for actors and best supporting actors, but as well as best film and maybe best cinematography, but I'm just happy it got nominated in something. So what do you guys think?
I'm super happy that it got nominated. I agree completely. I think Hugh Jackman should have at least been in the running for best actor for that role. That was a damn good acting role or acting part for the whole movie. It was so impressive.
Jeremy, what do you think?
Oh, I agree, man. I really, really loved that movie, and I'm hoping that that it kind of helps open the door for, you know, every now and then when we get, you know, a comic book related movie of that caliber, you know, that it just kind of opens the door for that stuff in the future.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. I think that would be super cool. I'm trying to, I'm looking it up right now to see what it's up against. All right, so best adapted screenplay. So you have Call Me By Your Name, The Disaster Artist, Logan, Molly's Game, and Mudbound, which
I've seen one of those movies, and
which
it's
is
Logan.
Logan, I guess. Right?
Yeah, it is. Okay. I haven't seen any of those other movies.
Okay, so I've seen all of these movies, and you want Logan to win. It's going to be difficult for Molly's Game not to win, since it's Aaron Sorkin and fast-paced type of thing, but I don't want it to win. The Disaster Artist, of course, is great, but who knows if any of that's going to win in light of all the James Franco stuff. Call Me By Your Name's really good. If y'all saw Moonlight last year, which won? Gay black guy. This is gay Jewish guy movie. So it has Oscar bait written all over it. Mudbound is good too, but I really want Logan to win. And I guess, would that be the first time that like a comic book would have won an Oscar in like one of the top five biggest categories?
I believe so.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of one, and I can't think of that.
You know, everybody wanted Heath Ledger to get nominated for Dark Knight Returns, but he did not.
No, he did. Heath Ledger definitely won the Oscar for Dark Knight.
He got the Golden Globe. He didn't get the Oscar.
I'm looking that up right now, but I'm pretty sure he did get it.
The suspense is killing me.
I really am.
I think he got an honorary, but he didn't get like best supporting actor.
Ledger received numerous posthumous accolades for his critically acclaimed performance in the film, including an Academy Award for best supporting actor.
Oh, he won it?
For Joker. Yeah, I remember that because I was like, nobody did better than him. And he definitely won that.
Well, okay, so does posthumous really count, though? Because I think that going into that, a lot of the time it's just because they died and they get the award because it's like, you know, sure, good. Give it to the guy because he's popular in the media right now.
I thought he
didn't
actually get the nomination. I thought they gave him like an honorary one, but I don't remember him actually getting the nomination.
No, he got
I bet if he hadn't died, he wouldn't have won it. That's where my money's going. Not that he didn't deserve it, but I don't think he would have taken it back then. I don't think the world was ready for that, except for the fact that he died.
I'm looking it up right now. And that came out in 2000. When did that came out? 2008? Yeah. 2008. It was Heath Ledger for The Joker, Josh Brolin in Milk, Robert Downey Jr. in Tropic Thunder, Philip Seymour Hoffman in Doubt, and Michael Shannon in Revolutionary Road. It would have been hilarious if Robert Downey Jr. won it for Tropic Thunder.
Nomination for that.
It was no honorary. He definitely won it, and he was nominated for it.
Well, so then I guess this would be the second one for a comic book movie.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, you're totally
interesting.
Right. Yeah.
And it's cool because it's not like an award for like best special effects or anything like that, you know.
Yeah, I guess I was trying to think if Jack Nicholson won or got nominated for his Joker in 1989, but I'm not seeing it.
I don't think he did.
Okay. But yes, folks. And it's a good performance.
Was it really Academy Award worthy?
That was an interesting point because I was like, but if Logan, how amazing would that be? Because usually when they show it on the Oscars, like the screenplay, they actually show like the actual script in the little, you know, film, and they show like how it like translates to the movie, and it's going to be badass. I really think so. But I really do think Sir Patrick Stewart and Hugh Jackman deserved acting awards for this because they were so damn good in it. So damn.
Agreed. It was the hopeful cool thing is if they actually do get the Academy Award for that, then it's going to give even more reason for other studios to try making movies like that. I know that it was a very popular movie, which is reason enough, but it's definitely going to crank up the attraction to make more movies that it might emulate that being hardcore, you know, R and things like that and more serious.
No, damn good.
It's funny to think about how like how awesome it would be for things like that to get nominated more frequently. And then think about the idea of Alec Guinness winning best supporting actor for Obi-Wan Kenobi for Star Wars. How fucking crazy is that? Like back in 1978.
He was that good though.
Yeah.
He was that good.
It was the beard.
It was the beard.
The beard is what won the award.
I wonder, you know what, you think of that, that he won that? Because he's not in the movie a whole lot, but, you know, you got to think, like, what scene did it? Like, what particular scene in Star Wars really got him the nomination and win? Because you think about it, and you're like, what one really stood out?
Well, yeah, and it's funny that of all the supporting actors in that movie, that I think he was really probably just because he's old, and they were like, well, he's probably going to die soon, and let's just give him this award because he deserves it.
I don't know.
That was his.
I mean, was he better than Grand Moff Tarkin? You know, I don't know. I think maybe Grand Moff Tarkin deserved the fucking award. Release him, Vader. There, you get the award. Fuck you. You're old.
Yeah, who knows? I don't know. I try to go back to that original movie, and you know, he doesn't have a lot of screen time.
I can't think of a single... There's not one scene where you're like, wow, that was good acting. Like, really? That was so moving, that line, and the way he delivered it. Oh, so good. I can't think of anything. You know, who's more foolish, the fool or the fool who follows him? I'll give that man a fucking Academy Award.
He had something to say. All right. Well,
it was the geezer lightsaber fight. That's what it was.
The geezer lightsaber fight where he just stood there and got killed?
The shuffling and the, you know.
it would be good. It'd be good. All right. Let's move on from this Oscar talk, but we do wish the best to Logan, for sure. Before we get into some Black Panther stuff, let's go through a couple other cool things. Did y'all know that there is going to be a Call of Duty movie coming out?
I had no idea.
So, yes, there is a Call of Duty movie coming out. It's been in the works for a while, and they just hired a director. I'm trying to remember his name, but it's the same guy who directed Sicario Part 2, Sicario the sequel, not the first one, which was Denis Villeneuve or whatever, who did all the really cool movies such as Blade Runner 2049.
I would ask what game it's based on, but it doesn't really matter because they're all the same.
No, it could be... I was going to ask if it's like Modern Warfare or is it World War II?
Rage right there.
They're just going to reskin it all. It doesn't matter. All the same shit.
I don't think they need to do a World War II one, but if they did like Modern Warfare 2 where like all the war came to like the U.S. kind of like in a Red Dawn type situation, that would be so cool.
Here's the way you figure out what they're going to do. Whatever one is the most bro, that's the movie they're going to make because that's who it appeals to.
The most bro one.
That's where Call of Duty makes its money, is the gamer bros.
All right, so the director's name is Stefano Salima. He did direct Sicario 2 Soldado. And it's been in production for a while, but plot details are very secret right now. They're not releasing anything. They are hoping to turn this in, Jeremy, into a mega franchise comparable to the Marvel and DC universe. So multiple films.
Yes.
I feel like it's going to be the movie G.I. Joe could have been.
I'm sure they will reach the quality levels of the Fast and Furious.
If they did that, they'd be stoked and I would too.
Just put The Rock in it?
Yeah. Put the rock in it. I'm good to go.
So Call of Duty is coming to theaters probably within the next 2 or 3 years. And the first guy to direct it will be the guy who directed Sicario 2. So if you want to see his directing style, check it out. Also, let's talk a little bit about records, a little bit of vinyl news. We've talked about it for a long time, and I've actually mentioned it for so long. I actually think I mentioned it the other day when Jeremiah and I saw Black Panther. Lord of the Rings has never been released on vinyl before, only CD. Well, that's about to change. The Fellowship of the Ring movie only is finally coming to vinyl in a gigantic 5 LP set.
But in 2 years, they're going to release a 7 LP set. So just a special edition.
Yes.
With 30 extra minutes of sad Enya songs.
Yes. This is basically all of the, all of it. And they're only releasing, unfortunately, right now, like this big set of just the first movie, which is, again, 5 records. They're all red colored. They come with tons of booklets and really cool keepsakes. The unfortunate thing right now is that the only way to get this right now is that it's $120. It comes out April 6th. It's $120, which, I mean, if you have the money, great. I mean, I'm definitely going to get this because I've been wanting this amazing soundtrack for so long. But I don't understand why they can't make, like, a cheaper version for, like, $40. And, like, I know I get the 180-gram vinyl, but if you just, like, put it on two discs, too, I'd like to see that both happen.
They do have a cheaper version. It's called Apple Music.
But records, though. Records. But yes, this would be five discs. And
I get it. I mean, I know a lot of people have been sitting around going, you know what would really round out my vinyl collection is a huge LP set of The Lord of the Rings so I could put it on the turntable and hear the Hobbit soundtrack as I smoke this joint.
Not the Hobbit, just Fellowship.
No, not the actual part. I mean the Hobbit music.
Oh, like
the music from Hobbiton.
Okay, Hobbiton.
The Shire.
I can't wait.
The thing I like the best about this news is that I know that at this exact moment in time when it's being listened to, that Josie currently has her phone in her hand and is Googling record players.
WTF is record player.
So, yeah.
What the fuck is a vinyl?
Yeah.
Is that what they make clothes out of?
Yeah, I'm very excited about this. So I wonder, you know, I guess they're doing this 120 set. I mean, it comes with a lot. If you look at it, there's tons of stuff with this. But I also wish that there was like a cheaper version, which not to say I wouldn't get that version, but because, you know, when Lord of the Rings came out, I literally bought every edition to it. I bought the two disc when it came out, the extended version, and then the whole sets. And like, they get me every time with Lord of the Rings. So I'm just going to have to do it. But I wonder after this comes out, if we'll get like Two Towers in Return, you know, every 3 months or so. That's a lot of records. Holy God.
That's a lot of vinyl.
Yeah, and it's just for the first movie, so you're going to – it's – I can't wait. And I guess April 6th, this is definitely before Black Friday – or not Black Friday, definitely before Record Store Day, which is usually the third week in April. So I guess it's not – it's going to be separate from that. But count your – I'll be counting down the days because I can't wait to listen to this for sure.
So what will you be doing as you have it on? That's what I'm curious. Like, in what scenario will you be just listening to the Lord of the Rings soundtrack?
Besides masturbating?
Of course. That's most, a given.
Anything. Like, you know, having a glass of whiskey or cooking, like, Hobbit food. I don't know. Or playing chess. I don't know. It's, like, all great music. I love it. I love soundtracks. I love scores. So... I've been wanting this one on vinyl for so long, and I can't believe the movie's been out for so long, it's never been released on vinyl, so I'm just glad it's happening right now. And I believe it's being released by Rhino, which is a huge record company, so that's pretty cool, too.
Right on.
So, yeah, I'm happy for that. Let's move on to... So, do y'all remember... back a few years ago, there was a short film that was like 30 minutes called Kung Fury.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, so they did that back. It was like a Kickstarter, I think. And they made a trailer. They made this 30-minute movie. And it's like it's just crazy. It's like dinosaurs and Hitler and 80s and
good barbarians. Movie. I actually enjoyed that movie.
Okay.
Me too.
So they're actually... Hollywood is making a pretty big budget movie for it, like now. And the original guy who created it, David Sandberg's involved, and they have Seth Graham Smith producing, and it's going to be full feature length. Well, they have cast two people in this movie, which should tell you just how serious they are about doing this movie. They have cast Michael Fassbender and Arnold Schwarzenegger.
I was about to say, what, did they cast Michael Fassbender? I was really about to say that. I had no idea that I just knew something about I knew.
Michael Fassbender and Arnold Schwarzenegger are set to star in Kung Fury along with Hasselhoff.
With Hasselhoff? Oh my! All right, that's I don't even know where to start.
You're not excited.
So no, I didn't say that.
So then does that mean that Fassbender is Kung Fury?
Yes.
That's really, really, really weird.
Why? I think that's amazing.
I feel like that's just a very strange casting choice. Like, you know what? Let's make this A-list. Who's that popular guy that people seem to like now? Michael Fassbender, sir. Yeah, get that guy. Put him in it.
Well, yeah, exactly. That's how that happened.
But he doesn't do any kung fu, like, sir.
I love
that's fine. We don't need him to do kung fu. Just put him in it.
He's probably like the 30-minute version. He's like, yes, this sounds like... Because Fassbender's usually, you know, like he's been in stuff like 300, but he's been in a lot of really serious movies. But this one, this movie is so insane. If you've seen the 30-minute version, I bet anybody's just like, yes, I want to do this movie. There's dinosaurs and Hitler and everyone. I'm going to do this.
I want to know who Schwarzenegger is going to be. Maybe he'll be Hitler.
No, you know what? I doubt. I mean, he's like Austrian. Bob
Mecha Hitler.
But what if he's like one of like the big barbarian guys?
What if he's Odin?
Oh, that would be so good.
Now he's on board.
No, I was on board already. But I'm definitely more on board now.
No, it's going to be great. But yes, David Hasselhoff will return as Hoff 9000.
It's really just the Michael Fassbender thing that has me baffled. The Schwarzenegger thing, in a way, makes sense, and I think that's awesome. But the Fassbender thing seems really weird.
So, tell our listeners who haven't seen...
Fassbender wants to have fun.
The Fassbender.
To tell our listeners about this movie, can y'all describe, like, what it's about?
Oh, man. How does one even describe that movie? It seems like a music video that's gone totally off the rails is how I would describe it. It's one of those movies that feels like a dream because it's kind of discombobulated and there's really interesting visuals being used in the movie that you don't really see anymore. But it's basically just the guy who has to go on this journey, right? And he encounters the Nazis. Is it just Hitler?
Tons of Nazis, because when he arrived, Kung Fury single-handedly mows down dozens of Nazi soldiers with his kung fu skills, but is gunned down by Hitler using a Gatling gun. But then Thor and like dinosaurs and Viking babes like help him out. Like, it's crazy.
Yeah, it's like, how do you even explain that? It's just something you have to see.
Yeah, it's basically this all like these 80s retro crazy like pop culture, like literally like robots, dinosaurs, robot dinosaurs, Thor, Vikings, all fight Nazis and Hitler. And it takes place in the 80s.
And you said the David Sandberg guy that played Kung Fury is working on this one?
Yeah, he's, as of right now, he is one of the producers with Seth Graham Smith and David Katzenberg. Seth Graham Smith, of course, you know, has done tons of things, including the recent It movie, Lego Ninjago, Lego Batman, Dark Shadows, Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter.
That's a good one.
There's
solid resume there. Nothing to question whatsoever in that.
I do think it's funny that he's like Kung Fury in the original one, and in his like fancy big produced version, he basically gets fucking replaced by Michael Fassbender in his own movie.
Of course. Nobody knows who Sandberg is. You get Fassbender and Arnold Schwarzenegger, of course you're going to go that way.
That's
like, look, we know we're only all here to make this movie because you made the previous one, but you're just not right for the part.
He said...
We really need Magneto.
Sandberg did say that this new project would be a clean slate containing zero footage from the short film, but taking place in the same universe. So...
Well, there you have it.
I'm good. I'm excited. I am. Hopefully you guys are. Y'all seem very hesitant about this.
Well, I think that's because we're not insane. I think it warrants hesitation. It's not one of those movies where it's an instant, yes, that's going to be great.
This is going to be better than the fucking Call of Duty movie.
That's probably true. But it's unlikely that it's going to be better than the original.
We'll see.
The thing that's going to be interesting to see is, you know, I mean, this thing's probably going to be like an hour and a half. It's, you know, how long can that joke run for before you're just like, oh my God, I'm good.
I don't know. I hope for the best. Because to put all these things in one movie and like see something like Kickstarter happen and like how this all progressed. Now you have Fassbender and Schwarzenegger. It's like, that's just cool. I hope it works out. I hope it does. All right. Moving on. We'll move on from this, sir. Wait a second. Do y'all remember a toy action figure called the Beastlies?
No. It
sounds familiar.
Mattel and J.J. Abrams team up for the Beastlies. So that's just news that came in, and I'm trying to remember what the Beastlies are. I'm looking that up right now. Beastlies. Oh, okay. All right. They're like plush monster dinosaurs things. So Mattel and J.J. Abrams are going to... an animated series and a feature film featuring the Beastlies. So.
Who gives a shit?
There you go. God, it's all over the place. All right. Let's move on to Black Panther. Jeremy and I saw it. I know, Jonathan, you have not seen it. We'll try to be as spoiler-free as possible. And we'll
I would appreciate that. As with the viewers, since probably no one else has seen it yet.
Correct. So we'll try to do like a more in-depth after you've seen it next week and more people have seen Black Panther. Yeah. But we've had a few days of sleep on it. And I must say, I think Black Panther for me is probably my personal favorite Marvel movie in the universe so far. I really loved it. I think it topped my number one, which was Guardians of the Galaxy.
Wow. So out of all the Marvel Cinematic Universe movies, that's your favorite?
Yes, so far.
Very impressive.
Jeremy, I'm curious to know what you thought after a few days of thinking about it.
You know, I dug it. I'm going to see it again tomorrow. Josie and I think we're going to go around about 12 o'clock and see it. I'm actually looking forward to a second viewing just because it was so much fun, and it was – the interesting thing about it was because when we were talking about it beforehand, it's like 2 hours and 20 minutes. But, man, like the 2 hours and 20 minutes flew by. You know, it just seemed – there was never like a moment where it just felt like you were like switching acts in the storyline. You know, it's not like there were separate – it just was like one great story from beginning to end. It was so much fun.
It really is. And – Ryan Coogler, the director of the film who directed Creed and Fruitvale Station, again with Michael B. Jordan, he outdoes himself. And it's like, it's a Marvel film that just like feels so original and fresh and not a lot of the same shit. Because when I usually go into Marvel movies, I'm like, okay, I'm going to get the same shit here and there. There's going to be crazy. And none of that was in here. It was just all felt new in a different direction. And I love that about it. And like Jeremy said, it's fast paced, like not in like just action, but just you're so engaged with the characters because the characters are so thought out. And I actually have to say like the villain Michael B. Jordan plays, like one of the only villains like that seems like legitimately like you know why he's that way and he deserves to be that way. Like you actually yes, he's right. And everybody else is wrong.
So there's some good depth to that character then.
Oh, holy shit.
He's not
shit.
Just a black and white villain type, you know? It's actually, living in that gray area a little bit.
He's all in the gray area. And this movie does a really great mixture of, like, having really poignant moments while still managing to being just super fun to watch.
Nice.
And another thing I dug about it was they definitely gave the Black Panther a very specific fighting style. I like how, you know, when you watch, like, Cap's got his signature things, like the way you watch him kick dudes and send them flying and the stuff he does. You know, to me, it's what Thor missed out on a little bit was, you know, there's not like the specific, you know, like Thor fighting style, but like Black Panther definitely has, you know, they definitely kind of cooked up special moves for him for this movie, which I really appreciated.
Yes, very much so. And what I thought when I was watching the film, there's so many great moments that really remind you, is like, oh, is Coogler like trying to hint at like he wants to make a James Bond movie? Because there's a lot of James Bond moments in the film that play perfectly. As well as even like Lord of the Rings-esque type of action sequences, which is pretty cool too.
Nice.
I thought it was. I just
loved, a lot of walking.
they just walked everywhere. It was damn good. And like every single character in the film is thought out. There's not one that's like, oh, they didn't get enough time or that character didn't amount to anything. No, everybody has a reason. Everybody has a purpose and motivation, and you all like pretty much relate to everybody. And it's just so well done.
Yeah, so, all the characters are great.
Yeah. And the soundtrack is badass. The effects are good. The way they do the origin and introduce everything is really cool. They just did a damn good job with it. And
I can't wait to see it. It sounds I've been looking forward to this one for a while.
Yeah, because in the trailers, I remember we've talked in the trailers before on the show, and we're like, the trailers looked okay. And it's like, okay, we've seen the same car sequence, like vehicle chase sequence. And like when you see this car chase sequence, you're like, oh, this is actually really good. They just showed us
They just gave you like a like tiny, tiny little taste of that entire sequence. It is so much bigger than that, than the preview makes it seem like.
Yeah.
So I've come to the conclusion that Marvel just doesn't make good trailers.
It's very true.
Because every movie that's come out, like, I'm always like, okay. But then I love the movie. The trailers are just so generic and vanilla.
Well, a lot of with the Marvel trailers, they actually plan them out like years before they start, because they have the visual development artists start working on keyframes that are going to be in the movie and things that they want so that they can build decent visual effects to have in those trailers.
Doesn't work out really well.
You know, I agree. but that's why almost every Marvel trailer is very, very similar.
Interesting. Yeah. I mean, they have a formula, I guess, but I wish it was better.
Well, it shows. The formula's there. It's all, and that's what's so exciting about it. It's like, okay, yep, that was the same trailer we saw for every other Marvel movie, just with a different person there.
No, it's really good. And what's cool about Chadwick Boseman, who plays T'Challa, Black Panther, he plays it with such elegance and like a sincere calmness to him, but it's his cast of supporting characters who really help him become who he is. Like they're all excellent. And I think one of like the biggest standouts in the film is T'Challa's little sister, who plays like the science gal. She is so good every time she's on screen. It's so good.
She's Wakandan Q.
Yes. It's so good. I liked it. And so one of my colleagues and friends named Alan, he mentioned that the end climactic fight sequence was what the end climactic fight sequence in Episode I Phantom Menace should have been like. Or should have been. Or what they wanted to do, but wasn't done well. So I was asking, since Jeremy's seen it, do you agree with that?
I don't know what's non-functional about the end of Phantom Menace. I don't.
It's like the best part of the movie.
Specifically, like are you talking like the lightsaber battle? I mean, what?
Yeah, I think it's the lightsaber battle and all that stuff going on in Phantom Menace. And
you mean
the
best lightsaber battle in all of the Star Wars movies?
Well, I think what Alan, because I don't know what he was trying to say, but he did say like this Black Panther version was the Phantom Menace done right. And
I think the Phantom Menace ending scene was the Phantom Menace ending scene done right.
I got to agree, man. I've yet to hear what's wrong with that lightsaber battle.
Well, maybe we'll get Alan on and he could talk to us.
There's a lot wrong with that movie. I don't think the lightsaber scene at the end is one of those things.
Yeah, I got to agree.
All right. and then to tell our listeners and Jonathan, yes, there are two stingers during the credits, one mid and one at the very end. So if you like the stingers, you'll want to stay for all of that. So, yeah. Pretty cool.
Yeah, I'm excited.
Any other lasting thoughts, Jeremy?
No, I'm good.
All right. Should we get to our two topics?
Let's do it.
Let's do it. Which one first?
Well, we're already talking about Marvel stuff, so let's stay on there.
Okay. So, inspired by a recent article written by Dan Moran, since Black Panther's coming out, and of course we have two other Marvel movies coming out, the big Avengers Infinity War and Wasp and Ant-Man and Wasp, what are your three favorite moments in the whole Marvel Cinematic Universe, starting from Iron Man 1 through present day? Like, and these are just like your favorite moments that you've like just always... Kind of like you when you watch a new Marvel movie, you're like, I hope this is like recreated in some good way, or just like, when I think of Marvel, my mind goes to these moments. So, Jeremy, you want to go first?
Yeah, I'll go first. so the way I did it was, there are a lot of moments that I loved in movies like Guardians of the Galaxy and Ant-Man that, you know. I didn't know what I was getting, but I loved it. Instead, I wanted to go with stuff that was in the comics that I got to see that just fucking blew my mind. I'm going to save my favorite one for last. Third, I think I got to go with the Hulkbuster and Hulk fight in the second Avengers movie. There were a handful of things when they started making Marvel movies where I was like, you know what? I really want to see this on a movie screen, and the Hulkbuster Hulk fight is exactly what I wanted, and it was so much fun.
Cool.
So for me, that was huge. My second favorite is the beginning of Captain America Winter Soldier. When he jumps out of the ship with no parachute, that's straight out of an Ultimates comic for something that Mark Millar and Brian Hitch did. And it's just executed so well, and so much of Cap's fighting style is taken straight out of the comics. And it's just such like a visceral, satisfying thing to watch. Like when he's running around the ship and he kicks that dude and he slams into the boat and then flips over the back of it. I could rewind that and watch that like over and over and over again. And I think my all-time favorite, hands down, though, I'm going to give it to Iron Man 2, and that's the suitcase armor. I think the suitcase armor, for me, is probably the most exciting thing I've seen in the Marvel movies.
Because that was really cool. I remember when that happened, like, that's badass.
And the second I saw them take the suitcase out of the car, I was like, oh, it's coming. It's coming. And then when it happened, it was so fucking great.
Sweet. So,
those are my three, but I will give an honorable mention also to another scene in Age of Ultron when they're all hanging out and they're taking turns trying to lift the hammer, and then it comes around to Cap, and then the hammer scoots a little bit and Thor freaks out.
That was a great scene.
That is a great scene.
It's funny, man, because people dog so hard on Age of Ultron, but there are so many just like really awesome little moments that I love in that movie.
It is good. It is good.
Not to mention that's really going to be your probably only movie where you get like those original Avenger cast members all like kind of flying side by side.
Yep.
In that beginning scene.
So good. All right, I like it. I like it a lot. Jonathan Atterbury, do you have any?
I do. I have them right here. And I went ahead and what I just did is I listed just the things that come to mind when I think of coolest stuff that I saw in the movies. Not necessarily for any particular reason, but just the things that stand out in my memory as being very cool. So first one I'm going to mention, this is in no particular order, but first one I want to mention is Iron Man 2. It's funny that, you know, Kluger thinks this movie sucks, yet this is high up for Jeremy and myself. In Iron Man 2, there's one of the coolest scenes to me is when War Machine and Iron Man are teaming up in that little dome towards, I think it's like towards the end of the movie, and they have the unit beam kind of thing. They're just fighting and destroying all of those drones together. That was one of my favorite scenes in all of the movies. I love that scene. So
yeah,
much
it was
fun.
Great. You had like the robot gore, like the oil and stuff, like splashing out everywhere.
And just explosions and all the different armament being pulled out and used. And it was just that I remember watching that going, oh my God, it's so good. It was a very exciting scene for me. So that one, definitely. Next up, I want to mention the scene in the first Avengers movie where I don't remember exactly where it is. I think it's somewhere towards the beginning of the movie, but the Avengers, and so we've got Thor and Captain America in the helicopter together, and that's when the whole fight between the two of them start.
Okay.
And so we've got that whole helicopter scene where, you know, Cap's got a few really funny lines in there. You know, and she's like, he's a god, basically, talking about Thor. And he says something along the lines of, you know, God doesn't wear a cape or something like that, right? What does he say?
No, he's like, there's only one God, and I'm pretty sure he doesn't dress like that.
Yeah, exactly. Something like that. So this is a really funny little line he had there. And then we've got that great fight scene between the two of them. And to me, the culmination of that great scene was where Thor hits the cap shield, and it does that whole, like, shockwave emanating from it, and the sound like the gong almost. I love that whole scene. I thought that was really cool.
I agree, man. Just like the whole fight, that actually little Cap and – or sorry, the Thor Iron Man fight is one of the best fights in that whole movie.
Yeah, it's true. And there's just a lot to love about that. But I think particularly that when that hammer hit that shield, that was such a neat thing to see. Mm-hmm. And lastly, I'm going to say the intro for Guardians of the Galaxy, our first exposure to Star-Lord, just watching him dance around, that was – something I was not expecting whatsoever. And it was like, okay, this is what we're going to be getting in this movie. It immediately kind of set up so perfectly the tone and feel of that film. And it was something that we hadn't seen anything like in the MCU yet. So I loved that scene.
It is good. So good. I like it. Good movies. Good moments so far. I'm going to have to go with, God, there's so many. From the Avengers movie, the first Avengers movie, when Loki is yelling at Hulk, and Hulk smashes Loki into oblivion. That moment, I just remember seeing it in the theater for the first time. Everybody went apeshit. Just everybody loved it. And I love that scene because it's so funny and so good. But I love that scene so much. Another scene is in Guardians of the Galaxy 1. The very end where Groot is saving everybody and he goes, "We are Groot." I think that is an amazing and emotional moment in one of the most emotional moments in any of the Marvel films.
I would agree.
I think that scene is so good. And I'm going I love the airport sequence in Civil War, but it's the last one is a cross between Avengers 1, where Bruce Banner says, "I'm always angry," and then he hulks out and, like, jumps on the big fucking space worm. which is just such a cool scene, or the elevator fight scene in The Winter Soldier, which is just one of the coolest fight scenes ever.
I agree. That's a fantastic scene.
It is a great scene.
That one. And so in my honorable mention, which I always think about always, is from Age of Ultron, Hawkeye explained to Scarlet Witch just how ridiculous everything is. Like, we're on a floating piece of land. None of it makes sense.
The city is flying.
Yeah. There's
robots. And I've got a bow and arrow.
Yeah, no, it's that scene is so good, and it's perfect Joss Whedon. So, yeah, those I think I always go to when I think about all of that. But, yeah, I got to go, yeah, with the Thor hammer, and then when Vision picks up Thor's hammer just, like, easily, and everybody's like, huh? I just think that's great, too. But, yeah, there's a lot of really fun, good moments in all of that. But, yeah, those are mine, too. Those were
very
good.
Nice.
Now I'm going to want to watch all of the Marvel movies now.
Yeah. I know, me too.
It's funny. It's funny when you think about Age of Ultron, because in the beginning, when, you know, Tony Stark makes the comment about how Cap's in charge, he's like, you know, I just design everything and pay for everything, make everybody look cooler. And it, even by the end of the movie, all Hawkeye still has is a fucking regular bow and arrow.
Yeah.
You know, he doesn't have the, like, you know, the Stark version of a bow and arrow, whatever the fuck that would be. He just has his regular ass bow and arrow.
Yeah, but those arrows do crazy things, though. But they're not.
Yeah, but they've always done that shit, though.
Okay.
They were doing that shit in the first Avenger movie.
I like Hawkeye. He's the underdog.
Hawkeye's appearance in the first Thor movie was pretty cool.
I'm trying to remember that. God, it's been a long
time
since.
That's when Thor first lost the hammer, and he goes to the site because he was like, oh, my hammer's there, and Hawkeye's actually the one guarding the site.
That's right. And
nobody – because that was before – you know, that was like really one of the first kind of like big guest stars where you're like, holy shit, that's Hawkeye. Oh, my God.
Yeah, and that's the Stan Lee cameo as well where he's trying – but and also in Black Panther movie – Stan Lee's best cameo to date.
I agree.
It's so good. We laughed out loud quite a bit.
Yeah, I think the whole theater did.
Yeah, it was good. So, all right. John, you have something you want to share, right?
Yeah, well, you know, I was thinking of just something fun for us to talk about, and I thought it'd be fun to talk about some TV shows and just to help narrow it down, in current production that we'd like to see turned into video games. Doesn't necessarily have to be realistic or a show that would leap out to you as being a great video game, but just whatever sounds fun.
All right.
So, Kluger, why don't you start us off?
All right. You said pick two, so I'll do two since I'm going first. First one, a Rick and Morty video game. In an open-world Zelda-like scenario universe, but in the Rick and Morty universe, where Rick and Morty have to go on all these adventures, and then kind of like the final kind of boss is like an evil Rick or something like that that Rick has created. But yeah, it's like Rick and Morty starting out their home and their home base, exploring like the town, and then just like going into these open world scenarios, kind of like Zelda-ish, but the sci-fi.
So a third person, kind of like Zelda?
Yes.
Gotcha.
So
I like
that. That would be super fun.
And so you said it's an RPG?
Yes.
So you can level up your character and have new powers and new gear and stuff like that?
Yeah, because they'll need to like acquire like the different instruments to like use against other monsters and aliens and time travel and stuff like that.
I like it.
And the other one is Stranger Things. And I want it to be just like the recent Tomb Raider video game reboots in that aspect. And then, but we'll get to switch off between several of the characters, the kid characters, as they do different things.
Oh, cool. I like that idea.
So those were my two two of the three suggestions that I would actually love to play.
Right on. How about you, Jeremy? What have you got?
Well, this actually kind of worked out because there was a game that I was thinking that I would really love that is probably never going to happen. And I'm violating your rules just a little bit here, as in this show is not on TV yet, but is in production.
Okay.
And I want a video game based in the world of the John Wick TV show that's coming.
Oh,
and here's what
nice.
I want. It's an action RPG. It would probably mostly be third person, where you are your own hitman that you create in this world. You're starting out entry level, where you get to pick, you know, what weapons you're starting out with. You know, you're getting basic jobs. But I want two parts of this world. I want it to be one where you just have, like, your regular offline stuff, but I also want there to be, like, a big, like, open world, like, type of thing. So, for example, we could go play a mission. I could go play a mission by myself, or I can go play a mission with you guys, right? And if I decide I want to turn around and murder Gumbercules for whatever reason, I can turn around and shoot Gumbercules. Like, I want it to have all the options. The other thing I want this game to have is, and I was thinking about this because we were talking about how much fun Shadow Warrior was. you know, that game and the old Duke Nukem games were the first games to really have, like, those kind of, like, interactive environments. Well, I want this game to be the next level of that. So, like, just like where John Wick can kill someone with a pencil, if there is something in the game that you can pick up and murder someone with it, I want you to be able to do that, like, in the game. So, like, a super aggressive, like, high-tech, like, hand-to-hand combat system to where if, you know, there's a phone and you want to beat someone to death with it and that's what you've got handy, you can totally do that.
Oh, man. I am so down for that game. And so you have a big setup, like, in the hotel where you can gear up and get better weapons and better cars and stuff like that over time.
You're earning coins. You can spend coins for stuff where, like, oh, well, I've got to get rid of these bodies, so I got to call the dude and give him some coins to get rid of the bodies. You know, you can choose different suits. You can totally customize, you know, how bulletproof or whatever or flexible the suit needs to be. So where that way you actually have to know, you know, what you're doing, do the research for whatever the mission is. And then as your dude gets big enough, because there would still be an overall story in the game, eventually your character gets good enough that someone hires you to go kill John Wick. And so the moment that you have, you know, story-wise in the game is, you know, once you go to meet John Wick, do you side with John Wick or do you side with the guys that hired you to kill John Wick?
Yeah.
That sounds so good. I love that.
That's the game I want. And I would also like a VR component, too, because that would be fucking badass.
I like this game. Why isn't this in production?
Man. That needs to be a thing.
I like that.
What's your second choice?
That's my only choice.
Oh, you shot the load on
you did.
One really great idea?
Yeah. that was the only thing, just because there's not, like, a lot of current TV shows. There was stuff like, I mean, I would enjoy an Altered Carbon game, kind of done in the style of like a Batman Arkham City type of thing. Have you guys watched Altered Carbon yet?
Nope.
Fucking me. yeah, I mean, basically futuristic detective story.
Nice.
That would make for that show would make for a pretty good video game.
Sweet.
Well,
I am 1,000,000% down for that.
Yeah, me too.
Game. That sounds like so
sounds
much fun.
So good.
Any game where we can just turn around and shoot Gumbercules, that sounds like a good time.
What?
And for the listeners, Gumbercules is Brian's gamer tag. So, and Brian, why don't you explain to our listeners why it's Gumbercules?
It's the strength of Hercules and the flexibility of Gumby.
Exactly. And ironically, Kluger has neither of those things.
Bullshit.
All right. So to finish up here, I'm going to list my two that I would like to see. I would like to see a really great X-Files video game in the style of, like, L.A. Noir. Have either of you guys played that game?
Oh, yeah. That's L.A. Noir. It's like Grand Theft Auto.
like Grand Theft Auto, but with a really pretty deep investigation system in there as well.
Yes.
So you're looking at crime scenes for clues, and you're interviewing people and trying to figure out if they're telling the truth, yada, yada, yada. I think that would be – I think there needs to be like that open world adventure style, but there also needs to be some actual detective work you have to do.
Yeah.
And so I think that an X-Files video game would be great, and the different missions could be – like the TV show was, where you've got kind of the monster of the week. You know what I mean? So this mission is this monster. This mission is tracking down this monster or this, you know, supernatural thing. And, of course, there could be like an overarching government conspiracy, which is the main story. So I think that would be a huge amount of fun. I'm a big X-Files fan, and I would love that.
Mm. I'm in. I loved L.A. Noire, and if it was X-Files sci-fi related, hell yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there's just been no, you know, considering how great and popular that show was, it's surprising that there was never a good video game made out of it. So there's that, and I know this, now this one, there have been video games made of this show, but none of them have been good or worth playing. I would like to see a truly great Jeopardy video game.
How hard is it to do a Jeopardy video game? Just trivia.
That's the question. That's the fucking question. Yet every Jeopardy game that's been released so far has been just crap. And the reviews are horrible for all of them. They're broken. They've got like a 200 questions that you end up recycling over a short period of time. It's really stupid. So there really needs to be a really great in-depth multiplayer, even online multiplayer, Jeopardy show. And fucking Alex Trebek needs to host it, because that's been one of the biggest problems, is that you've got the Jeopardy shows and the games, and Alex Trebek isn't even in them half the time.
Yes,
it's crazy.
It's weird, because so I love trivia shit, and that's why I've been playing HQ Trivia recently, and it's great. They did this Xbox hat when Xbox was awesome, when you used to be able to like watch movies with one another on your headsets at the same time. They had One Verse 100, which was the live hosted trivia thing on Xbox. And if they did it with Jeopardy, with like the multiplayer and everything, like they did with One Verse 100, I have no idea why they stopped that. That would be the best.
I think it would be so much fun, and you could have it laid out just like the show, where you've got three people going against each other live.
And they're,
you
know, randomly picked.
Yeah, exactly.
Whoever's signed on, they pick three random people to do it.
Yeah, or you could, of course, have private matches where you're going against your friends or people that are in the same room. And, you know, there's so many options for great multiplayer fun, or even single player fun. You could have career mode where you're saving, you know, you're winning cash and stuff like that. And with the cash, you could buy whatever, new outfits. I don't fucking care. Things like that. But I just, it needs to have a live and constantly updated store bank of questions. That's been the biggest problem so far. With the amount of digital information that's out there, there's no reason why we shouldn't be able to have a continually updated bank of questions on an online game. There's no reason.
They could sell a season pass for that and make a shitload of money.
I would love that game, and they need to have a good avatar for Trebek, and he needs to voice it, and that's really what they need to do.
I'm in.
I just want a good Jeopardy game. That's not too much to ask for.
I want all these video games.
I do too. I think we need to be in some kind of idea bank for video game creation.
Send some emails out. Well, that's our show. I hope y'all enjoyed it. Mediocrity, we're on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. Look up Multimedia Men. Subscribe. We'll definitely be back next week with more fun topics. Maybe a recast of a certain one of the best movies of all time, which will be very difficult to recast because you can't see anybody else but these people playing these parts.
That's going to be a very difficult one to recast.
Very
there's
much.
Also a lot of people.
And we'll have more news, and hopefully we'll get more deeper into Black Panther in a non-sexual way next week, after Atterbury has seen it and Jeremy has seen it for a second time. But yes, anything else y'all want to add before we leave?
No.
Nope. I'm good.
I'm done.
I'm spent. All right. Well, we love you. We miss you. We'll see you next week. Mediocrity.